Chris now, and that's the job of Jonathan. And Cabrini, welcome to Scrivener. If you'd like to give us an introduction, please.
Thanks. Thanks, Chair. The last time we came to talk about urgent emergency care, we presented the Scrivener panel with the blueprint document for urgent emergency care, which sets out our local vision for meeting the national expectations for making and implementing best practice along the whole of the urgent care pathway. What we've presented to you today is a bit of an update and some of the key work that's taken place since the autumn, since we were last here, on particularly on two key areas, and in the new outline of some of the other phases of work to come in 2019. Cabrini can talk about the clinical involvement that we've had over the autumn, and particularly around the workforce and the workforce modelling. And I'll just run you through the paper if that's okay. So I think it builds on coming in late to the last discussion, really, some of the work that Maggie and Nikki were talking about in terms of some of the improvement work that's already taking place physically within the hospital site. But one of the things that we've been working on through a series of co-design workshops over the autumn was really beginning to develop the plans for an urgent treatment centre, which is one of the key national expectations. And I'm pleased to say that last week we attended an authorisation panel meeting with NHS England that signed off on the island's blueprint and plans for going live with our urgent treatment centre, which brings together all of that work that we've done with the Trust, with primary care colleagues and the stakeholders since the autumn. And the paper really gives you an outline of that. But really, the urgent treatment centre is the first step, really, for separating out and, if you like, providing right care at the right time in the right place for people along that urgent care pathway. And it really helps us wrestle with some of the challenges that we've been facing on the island around workforce, as you've heard, around maximising the resource within the hospital site and then making best use of the primary care capacity within the island as well. I don't know if Cabrini wants to talk a bit about the workforce challenge at this point.
I mean, I think the workforce challenge as well. I think the workforce challenge is apparent both within the trust that run the out of hours GP contract, as well as in the primary care workforce, as well as our patients understand that access to a previous old-fashioned model of doctors is not the sustainable going rate future. And we already understand that a mixture of workforce, both from the healthcare assistants to nurses to paramedics and doctors and nurses, that will deliver an urgent care model of the future that is sustainable. So we're transitioning from one journey to the next, and the GP shortage on the island has become apparent both in out-of-hours work and in the local practices that you see. An urgent care answer across the practices on day demand appointments, but this has a synergy with the urgent treatment centre when we roll together AME minors, AME minor illnesses, and out-of-hours GP. And the reason we roll those together is because the workforce can deal with any of the issues there, and unfortunately demand fluctuates. So we've done some pretty in-depth analysis across the system. We're trying to understand our data sets, and we've come to a workforce model that should be sustainable for the island and should bring a solidity in that workforce, and there's a truly integrated model between primary and secondary. And uses a diverse workforce model to deliver the right person to the right care. And it works with our provider form one to flow those patients into the right urgent category. We all understand that emergency is more an ambulance and in a walk-in centre attendance at A&E. However, urgent care is understood by everyone as their own individual taking. And form one helps us to understand who needs to go to an urgent treatment centre where we have diagnostics available at a high level of and blood tests, for example, and can step up care if need be through accident emergency partnership working. And also will stream patients away from that urgent treatment centre into primary care where appropriate. And so it's really formulating a the perfect flow, if you like, to enable the workforce to be sustainable. And that brings on a financial consequence of sustainability, which we think will bring out to the system. And I think also patients' pathways have been confused. I say patients, I mean clients or whatever the price group, but ultimately I think this will streamline, and as it gets rolling and develops, I think that it will be really readily understood by the population you are wide, and be a really efficient use of our resource.
Thank you. Pressure button now.
So Cabrini's touched on quite a lot there, and that's detailed really in pages 2 of the report. The other, so the physical space is the urgent treatment centre which shares that workforce, and the other part of the service that we've been working on concurrently is around the 111 improvements and what is called the clinical assessment service, or CAS, which is actually that blend of physical and online workforce that helps to stream 111 calls and assessments through to the right place. So those are really the first phases of significant change that the public will see to urgent care. So in terms of contractual changes, we've been working with the Trust and with Primary Care to build a new contractual model for building this new way of working going forward, and we hope to have that in place by April to allow us to then move to going live with the service from June as per our agreed plan with NHS England. In terms of public facing launch, NHS England have agreed that we should be looking to go live publicly with changes to names, signage, etc. by October, and that also allows us to embed some of the digital infrastructure that underpins 111. And some of the changes in that area to enable this work to happen seamlessly behind the scenes. So that really is the update for today. So a lot of positive work. I know you've heard some challenges in relation to CQC related work, but actually there's a lot to be positive about over the next coming year.
Jonathan and Cabrini, thank you very much for that update. I think we've got a question from John.
Thank you, Jim. First of all, I'd like to roll some credits on. I was very fortunate to be asked
to visit the 111 hub, and also to look at the ambulance and paramedics. I'd like to thank Victoria White, who's head of ambulance, Lee Hayward, ambulance hub, Florian Clayton, tour of the ambulance station. Tim Peachy, who I met here as the non-executive director of the Trust. I'd also like to thank Maggie for making that all possible for me to look around it, which I was very impressed. But I have a question. I'm sorry it might sound a bit hard, but I'm very concerned about this. Oh, also Laura Weston, by the way, for little sheepy. I'll read it because I've written it down because I need to investigate. I visited the ambulance station and associated facilities at St Mary's on Monday the 5th of March 2019, only arranged by the Trust. During this I was informed that the two social workers who were previously located within the 111 hub have now been removed. The other staff within the hub indicated that they had not been advised why this had taken place, and believe that the presence of the social workers and a full investigation service to be available to overcome the need to admit people to hospital. I was concerned over this, and therefore I asked for comments from the Director of Adult Services and the Cabinet Member. They have advised me, Nicky Turner, Director of Acute Services at the Trust, asked that the work on the hub continue only with Trust colleagues because of internal issues that the Trust needed to deal with. This was approximately 5 months ago. It was agreed that the Trust would contact us when made ready for ASC to get involved. That's not yet happened. In the meantime, we have had a full-time SW based at A&E in order to prevent conditions where the involvement of ASC can play a role. She is actively diverting people every day, and I have received an expression of thanks and praise from a range of colleagues of the Trust, including the Chief Executive. My questions are, given that One Mind Hub is the first point of contact for people requiring help, should they be the social worker be situated within the hub rather than wait for people to turn up at their need? And the second question is, when will the internal issue within the trust be resolved so that the previous practice, which recognises as externally practised by the CQC inspection team in June 2014, can be relocated within the hub?
John, thanks for that question.
I'm happy to start. I'm not sure if you want to come in. If you want to start, you're not looking very happy. Okay. So basically, under Local Care Board, there were a number of key initiatives, one of which was the Urgent Emergency Access Hub, and that was a piece of work that Nikki on behalf of Local Care Board was leading. Nikki, at an operational delivery group, and it'll be in minutes, basically said that she didn't want social care to be involved in that because of what the work which was ongoing within the trust, and that she would alert us to when we could be getting re-involved. And I've had an email from Nikki to that effect, dated the 17th of March at 09:59. So that's why. It's not about removing social workers, and Councillor Howe, we thank you for reading out the response that was sent to you after you'd asked that question. What I will take on board was that perhaps I should have thought, I obviously communicated with my own social workers, but what I did not do was to ensure there was any communication to other groups who were engaged in the in what was called then the enhanced hub arrangement. So that's where I'm from, and I, from my perspective, that's as accurate as I can possibly get to you.
Thank you, Carol. Anybody else want to comment?
Can I just ask Carol to reiterate part of the answer that I don't think it came over across how was the social worker
at hospital? Yes, so we've had a social worker based in A&E in order to try to support any unnecessary admissions because that person may require support. That arrangement is working reasonably well. I do think that we need some empirical evidence around the numbers of people that have been successfully discharged, but certainly I've got lots and lots of different case studies of how valued that role is and how impactful that role is. And as I said in my response to you, including an email, you know, from Maggie herself to that very effect.
Sorry, Carol, can I just come in there? You talk about just people coming to admissions. I'm talking about overall problems of people, say, who are being discharged, because in there, the people who are being discharged, they've got patient transport and everything else. Wouldn't it be a good idea to that? I mean, I've been to hubs, the other hub for children's services, and they've always said that to have everybody that's responsible will be working on things in the same area so that they can all work together.
So there are
and
more,
yeah. Wouldn't you think it would be a good idea if somebody's being discharged that we're getting, this patient is going home today, can you arrange for a social worker to be available when they get to their house or something like that, you know, to actually talk to each other instead of having one lot in one area and two other people at A&E. It just seems, you know, they need to work together. Social workers are not just for people being admitted in the hospital, they're surely there to help them throughout all the stages for when they're discharged.
They most certainly are, and the hospital social work team do precisely that, Councillor Howe. So each and every day, so for instance, in the 7 days ending last Friday, the hospital social work team had a further 59 referrals for people who were in the wards in those last 7 days. They actively worked on discharging last week
out some 27 people from hospitals. So, and the hospital social workers worked with the wards, worked with the families throughout that. And in addition to that, for people for whom we have no right, no legal right to work with, if they don't wish to work with social services in terms of the discharge, we have a legal duty towards those people who are eligible for social care. For those people who are not, we also provide, without any charge, a support service to arrange any care needs that they may have. And we also fund the voluntary community sector, it's based in the carers lounge in the hospital, for people to work with the voluntary community sector. And that is their right, because adult social care, unlike a doctor or a nurse in the hospital, has no right to go to a patient's bedside and to insist that we work to support them to be discharged unless they wish us to do so.
Yeah,
so what we're given is options.
Sorry, Carol, we're not talking about bedside, we're talking about a hub where you're arranging for different patients. And if the trust and social services don't get on, then that's fine, we just have to live with that. I thought the idea in the future was to bond things together.
Sorry, we have press here, and can I just clarify that, I don't know how we asked Councillor Howe to take that back. The one thing I can assure you is the trust and adult social care has worked, doing on really well, and work incredibly joined up. So if there might have been some misunderstanding of the process and what's going on with social workers, I'm happy to take you on another visit, maybe go with the Hope's Hospital social work team, but the one thing I do not want limited at this meeting is anything other than adult social care, the CCG and the Trust are working together for the future benefit of Ireland residents.
Thank you.
Oh, sorry, you feel that way? I'm just going on what I was told when I went to 111. And yeah, they told, and also found out that they were asked to take them out because they weren't prepared to work them in with the trust members. Sorry.
No, that truly is not the case. I have not removed social workers because we're not getting on. What was happened was, and perhaps it's really important to listen to Nikki. Is that Nikki, who was leading a really key piece of work that you've had presented to you this evening by Jonathan and Cabrini in terms of moving forward, wanted to be able to concentrate first on doing that integration across secondary healthcare, i.e. hospital, and primary care. And that was absolutely what Nikki brought to the ODG meeting that I referenced and that's in the minutes. And so therefore it was determined at that stage that social care would not be part and parcel of the arrangements at that juncture, because it was felt more important to begin to articulate and develop precisely the developments that you have in the paper in front of you this evening.
Thank you. Just to reiterate something that Cam said, is actually there are many phases of development here. Absolutely right to say that actually at that juncture it was necessary for the secondary care and primary care to consolidate. But what I would say is we're all working very dynamically out there. We've got social workers who are fantastically working within the emergency department, we'll be seeing all over the trust and out in the community as well. I think what we have to realise is there will be on a day-to-day basis sometimes some challenges or tracking, you know, whether it's our member of staff or it's the social workers, these people are doing multiple roles. It's just how we connect that together, and whether there's a touch point or a base within the hub or it's within our ED or wherever else it is, I think it's important to recognise that actually we're working collaboratively together. Jonathan, I don't know if you wanted to add as well.
Carol's right, the local capital did agree to redefine the scope of the original project, which was focused on developing the physical world, but actually we redefined that to focus on meeting the national expectations in terms of delivering the pathway. In terms of being able to work together. That's still the case in terms of the interoperability of that the telephony systems allow us to do. So because people aren't based in the hub, it doesn't mean that calls aren't able to be transferred or dealt with in a coherent way. And so we are going to move back to developing the physical hub, but actually it hasn't had an impact in terms of interoperability at this point.
Good. Thank you very much. John, I think that was a sensible question to ask if you're understanding. Thank you very much for the very reassuring answers.
I appreciate that, Chair. And I just say that it all started off with a desk sitting in the middle of the hub with a banner over the top saying social workers. And I just say, oh, where are the social workers? They're on lunch or something, are they?
John, it was a very good question to ask, and very good answers as well. Joanne, did you want to pass a comment?
Yeah, I just got a question about triage. So how's triage going to work in the urgent treatment centre? How's that going to be with triage at A&E?
I think streaming. I think it's much more about streaming than triage. I think we do administrative triage on the normal calls that enable us to get to the right position. But in as we approach the A&E front group, I think as the patients have booked appointments in the urgent treatment centre, as well as the minors that walk in, they will go straight into the urgent treatment centre, and it will be a streaming into that. And we expect that the workforce model we've got, we will achieve all national targets when we consider their consulting times, but we would hope to even be quicker than that. So I think less about the triage, it's a case of getting to the right clinician. And really, as it's a primary care led, and working in conjunction with the secondary care colleagues, that integration will really stream well as it gets into its modus of operandi.
Michael, did you want to bring a few questions up? Michael, did you have a question?
Basically, just one. In the report on the page 4, it said mental health practitioners moving back to the hub provided clinical consultation. I didn't know that they'd moved out. I mean, someone tell me the sort of story of that. It seems as if they were there, but then they moved out, then they moved back in.
So in the redesign of our mental health services, particularly looked at the single point of access, and actually it's a similar sort of context as the conversation we just had. You might have a few resources that can't all be based in one area, but how best to actually locate them, or where to locate them, and how to keep that contact with 111 as they develop their model. So they develop the single point of access model. They're in a position now that they've got the resourcing that they wish to actually spend more time actually in the 111 hub, provide that additional support to the calls that they're receiving through that mechanism. So again, it's about learning the model. It has several phases of development, and that's where they are at this point in time. So they will return because they have the resources to do so.
Thank you. With the explanation and response we've had, I think that we can say we welcome the progress to be made in delivering this service. We'll move on to item 7 now.